Hello and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast of PitcherList.com. I'm your host, Eric Samulski, joined by the man himself, Nick Pollock, as we continue looking at his top 200, five pitchers at a time.
What is happening? We're doing this.
A lot.
We got to move.
We're going fast, people. Continue to go fast. We got a lot to say, actually, about this next guy, so we're going to dive right in because I talked about him at First Pitch Arizona. You've talked about him a bunch this year. I'm a little surprised that Clark Schmidt is down at 66 for you. And so let's talk about, we've talked about the emphasis of the cutter for him and how it really kind of changed him a little bit as a starting pitcher, helped with his splits issues. Why is Clark Schmidt here at 66 and not up with like the Walker Buehler, Yusei Kikuchis of the world, where I feel like it's not a huge, you know, you're talking about like late 40s, early 50s. You're not talking about a huge gap, yeah. But I just think it doesn't he kind of have that upside to like put up a low threes ERA and a really good team with potential for wins and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I don't know how much I buy him being a 26% strikeout rate guy. I mean, that's okay. You mentioned Kikuchi. It's like, well, Kikuchi, I can see 25% plus strikeout pretty easily. And with Clark Schmidt, I'm really happy that he embraced the cutter this past year. He had a 17% swing strike on both lefties and righties when throwing that that pitch this season. But he doesn't have an overpowering fastball. The sinker is hoping to do enough against right-handers, and it actually didn't do good things with 48% ICR this past year. I'm worried also about his efficiency. He had a 5.3 innings per game this season, which is not fun. All those were starts. And I'm not quite at the point of Clark Schmidt dominating every single game and deservedly so. I'm a little hesitant about it. I think he nibbled a bit this year. 8.5% walk rate, I think, is a product of that. Still coming into his cutter, but I think there is some regression here. I don't think that he is a sub 3 ERA. I don't think that Clark Schmidt, again, is that 25% plus strikeout rate guy. And I really wrestled with it. Do I put him at the bottom of that Holly tier with, say, Yu Darvish or so? Do I put him all the way back instead of this upside flyer tier back to where Christopher Sanchez is of this is a Toby kind of player? It really was tough for me to discern where to place Clark Schmidt. I want to believe you have him and you don't drop him. Also, being on the Yankees does help. He should get wins this year. He's going to be definitely in that rotation this season. I don't think that, say, like Marcus Stroman would kick him out or anything like that. Gerrit Cole was removed in the beginning, and that really opened the door for him until he got hurt. But with Clark Schmidt, I like him, but I don't know if he quite does enough to say, like, oh yeah, I can't drop Clark Schmidt on my team. He's just too good. I think it's going to be kind of middling throughout the year.
I have him around like Eflin, Lugo, which is kind of like where you have like that Yu Darvish tier, the end of that tier. That's where I have him right now.
He hasn't proven himself as that efficient pitcher yet.
Agreed. Yes. He is not as proven as Eflin or Lugo. I'm leaving him there because I believe it, but I understand we haven't seen it in the same way, the same track record.
It's close. It's very close. I think it's just because it's a worse, he doesn't have the sinker that he places as well as those. It's cutter, sweeper, really, and knuckle curve. I wish I had that better sinker against righties.
Speaking of track record, our number 60, your number 67th ranked pitcher does not have a long track record as well, because he was a reliever like Clark Schmidt and was converted to a starter and then was out pretty much all of this last year. Came back at the very end, and it's Tampa Bay Rays lefty Jeffrey Springs. We talked on one of the last episodes about Drew Rasmussen, and we talked about the fact that somebody might get squeezed from the Tampa Bay rotation. I think you and I are both of the mind that Springs makes it in. What did you see from Springs this year in terms of just the quality of his arsenal coming back from injury, and you assume fully healthy and a full starting pitcher going into 2025?
Yeah, I mean, so the first two starts, he wasn't quite there yet. And then all of a sudden, he just clicked in. It's like, okay, cool. Here's my changeup. Here's my four-seamer. Like, let's go. It's a lefty with an elite changeup. And I recognize that, yeah, this is very good when he does start. It's just a question of, is that arm fatigue that he had in the second half last year something real? Is he okay and fine? And if so, I think he's a Holly easily. I have Springs here because, again, I like the fact that it is an easier decision early.
Right.
And I actually debated between him and Clark Schmidt a ton because I do feel that we'll get more clarity on Springs as opposed to Schmidt early on. But Schmidt, I think, has a higher ceiling as far as volume goes for 2024. It's just kind of balancing those two. But yeah, Springs has showcased that, look, I can get a ton of righties out with my changeup and four-seamer. And then when it comes to lefties, it's just about buying that slider a little bit better than he has in the past, down and away, as opposed to kind of over the plate more. But yeah, I think it's a good enough skill set and honestly really good command than you normally see. So it's just a question of health. And I totally understand in deeper leagues where you really need to commit harder that you'd be dropping Springs further because there's so much haze about the health and it's not SP1 upside when you do have a question of health. Still, as long as Springs is pitching, I think we should be saying, all right, Springs is pitching, he's a Holly. And that's a really good thing to have on your teams that you won't want to drop when he's on the mound.
Yeah, I'm with you. I have him 60th, so slightly above, but we're kind of in the same range and the same tier and the same discussion of some of these guys. We're going to talk about three exciting young pitchers, but we're going to do that right after this break. So your number 68 pitcher is not quite as young as the two pitchers that we'll talk about after him. But it's somebody that we really like. Last year was his first full year in the rotation. Well, full, but he had an injury. But it's Tigers starting pitcher Reese Olson, who we talked about early in the year as like incredibly unlucky in wins
for a
guy who was pitching as well as he was and couldn't buy a win. Then he got hurt. He had a few starts, I think it was like four starts maybe, where he just kind of got pounded, like did not pitch well. And then it seemed to click back in again. Do you think that there is still room for growth for Reese Olson heading into 2025? And do we think he's locked into a rotation spot?
So first and foremost, I got to say, Reese Olson just destroyed right-handers. His slider, 31% usage and a 15% ICR. 15 across 31% usage with a 60% strike rate and a 21% swinging strike rate. That is just unheard of. While he also had a sinker, he threw 45% of the time and about 30% ICR. Like, guys just couldn't do anything with this. The changeup itself had a 28% swing strike rate. It's bonkers. He shouldn't be throwing that four-seamer much at all, but when he did, I mean, he only threw 6% of the time. It was a lot of times in two strike counts. Trying to go upstairs where they didn't really do that. And I'm honestly like, don't try and throw fastballs away. I don't like this. This isn't a good offering. Don't do this anymore. Okay, cool. Thanks. But against left-handers, it's a little bit more of a struggle. And you would think, what? He's got a really good changeup. That should be just so good. Only a 57% strike rate with it. That's the big difference. That's really where the growth would come, in my view, that Reese Olson has an absurdly good slider. And actually, I don't think I've seen this, a 25% usage slider to lefties, opposite-handed, with a 74% strike rate and 24% swing strike rate. It was so good against both sides, consistently getting strikes. It was his money pitch. It was just the thing that he always threw. And having that changeup as that real nullifier is massive. The other issue is he doesn't really have a fastball to use effectively against lefties. The four-seamer is bad. There was 37% of the time against left-handers. And Reese Olson does not do well with this pitch. 5% swing strike rate, just a 61% strike rate overall, and high 42% ICR. He's allowing bad contact on it. So when I look at this with Reese Olson, I see a guy who needs something different in a cutter or something else that isn't the four-seamer to help with lefties. It can't just be the slider and changeup. And against righties, he's got it made. Don't touch the four-seamer whatsoever. He needs a little bit more consistency just overall with that changeup feel. So there is another level to have there. It's hard to bank on guys that don't have a really good fastball, I mean, say for just a sinker to the same-handedness, right? Like you have the opposite-hand batter. You need a cutter or a four-seamer or sinker that is just, okay, this is what I'm going to use. This is what we complained about with Clark Schmidt. Schmidt leaned into the cutter. He got better with it. I've been like pairing Reese Olson and Clark Schmidt together because both of them have this inconsistency and lack of polish towards being those six inning consistent guys yet. However, they both have the ability to become that in the year ahead. Do I think that Reese Olson can become a 25 to 30% strikeout guy? Honestly, maybe if that change of consistency is there, considering how much whiffs he get with both the slider and the changeup. But because the four seamer and sinker don't get any whiffs like at all, it's probably going to be hard for him to do that unless he has a cutter introduced there. So overall, I like Reese Olson, but I don't know if he's just going to be slider and that's it really entering the season, or if the changeup is going to actually take that next step and become a more reliable 60 to 65% strike rate and make it so that he really can just push that four seamer into his back pocket and just go secondary focused.
Yeah. I think you and I are both kind of in the same boat with him. Like, I have him ranked right around guys like Ryan Nelson, Taj Bradley, Mackenzie Gore, Brian Bayo, or guys that maybe I'm a little higher on than you, but they're all guys who you say, like, there's like one or two things here that could actually unlock like a huge jump in value for you. I think maybe Olsen, well, Nelson too, but those two guys seem to have like the safest floor as they currently are constructed, right? Like, those pitchers, if they didn't change at all, might be better than what you'd get from like a Taj Bradley, Brian Bayo, Mackenzie Gore. But
yeah,
I think they're all in a realm of like, there's another level here. I'm trying to get a lot of Reese Olsen because I like the organization. I like the development. I think that there's a real path forward where he becomes just like a rock solid, like SP3 type of arm in your fantasy teams. His teammate is your number 69th ranked pitcher. Arguably, I think now he's no longer arguable. I think he is just the top starting pitcher in the minor leagues. It's Jackson Jobe. I have a gut feeling that we're going to see Jobe on like a Paul Skeens type of timeline in 2025. And it wouldn't surprise me if we get a Paul Skeens type of season where like he comes up in June and is just so from the jump.
It could be.
He ended the year in the bullpen for the Tigers, to get innings and to help their bullpen out. I think he starts the year in the minor leagues in the rotation. But I think he's up by the summer, right? I mean, continues to pitch as well as he has been. Do you think he's not as MLB ready as Skeens or what?
Yeah, I do. I think Skeens just was like, I'm doing this through all of college, and like I did the same thing and everything else, and like he just came up and just did his thing. Save for the debut, which is always going to be where the debut. Jackson Jobe, I want to see more. I'm very curious because the pitch shape metrics that I get for Jackson Jobe, not nearly as impressive as I thought they were going to be. And I look at, say, the four-seamer with about 6 feet of extension, a little bit more, 6.2, which is like, wait, hold on a second. That was supposed to be, that's not good. I want that 97 to feel like 98, 99, not really actually like 95, 96. And it's average, but like slightly above average flat attacking. So 1.2 adjusted VA, but also 17 inches of vert. So you have above average attack angle. You have great vert, elite velocity, just below average extension. I'm like, oh, I didn't want that one thing. That one thing just messes me up a little bit. But it's really coming down to like the cutter, the changeup, the sweeper. We haven't really seen it enough. Are those secondaries that he can really just get endless whiffs with and strikes with? I don't quite know yet. Mm-hmm. I also saw him as a reliever, which isn't quite fair because it doesn't showcase how you would normally see him. Inside rotation, the velocity as well, because he's going max effort as a reliever. So I'm just excited to get more data on him and get a better sense of his whole picture. I do think that Jackson Jobe, when he does start, is going to be a guy that you're going to want to roster and have on your fantasy teams. I don't think anyone should expect the Paul Skeens kind of elevation. Skeens throws harder. His splinker is the pitch that I just did not realize how absurd it is for Skeens. And Jackson Jobe doesn't really have that. I remember when I first saw him in the spring of last year, like very briefly, I think we got like one game of it or something, and it was just lights out absurdity with four pitches, and that was what the scouting report was. But there's a difference between hearing things and maybe one inning or so than actually watching a guy in full for multiple starts in the majors. And then I was completely wrong in that Skeens is just so good. So with Jackson Jobe, I have him here because, look, it's a binary thing in the beginning. Are you going to want to stash him? Probably. But I really want to insist you don't want to stash him the entire year. It's what we kind of did during spring training last year. We're thinking, oh man, Jackson Jobe's going to be here. And he never showed up. Obviously he had that injury too, but that wasn't fun. And value now is worth two times value later. So if you're thinking, no, he's going to be up by, I don't know, April 20th or something like that, maybe May 1st, then it's also June 1st. And that's 2 months. that you could have been getting other things in. Who knows if Jackson Job would have still been available even on the waiver wire. And who knows how good it's going to be when he does arrive. Is it going to really be that big league winner? So don't lean too heavy in stashing Jackson Job. But if you have the open spot, sure. And I'm fine with it before the season starts. But if he's on the rotation, then I think you kind of move on.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, my thing with Skeens was more not that saying he's going to put up the year Skeens had, that the, I think the timeline.
I'm with you.
And obviously the pitching as well as Skeens, in the sense that he would pitch well enough to maintain a spot in the rotation, that once he's up, he's going to be up and be a formidable MLB starter. But yeah, I'm intrigued by Job. If, you know, deeper leagues where you can really you have the luxury to stash for 2+ months, he might be worth it. A starting pitcher, starting pitching prospect who might be up sooner than Job just because of need is an interesting guy who I think not as many people know about if you're just, you know, if you don't play dynasty leagues or keeper leagues or whatever, because Noah Schultz of the Chicago White Sox really kind of emerged this year. He wasn't really on a lot of radars before this year. Now I believe he's universally considered across whatever site you're on, one of the top five pitching prospects in baseball. And I think that there's a, I don't know if he for sure will break camp with the White Sox. But I think that there's an outside chance. I mean, he's 21 years old, giant 6'9" lefty. He did those 61 innings in double A. So I think we could be looking at like starting the year in triple A at kind of like the worst case scenario for Schultz. And he's knocking on the door right now.
I mean, yeah. Noah Schultz, I remember having him last year in my top 400. I think just a note being like, oh, he's really good, but like, you're not going to see him. But he's really good. Yeah, we actually saw Uncle Ted here on our live YouTube stream talking endlessly about how Noah Schultz is the next Randy Johnson 20 times. So we got you, Uncle Ted. We told you, we read this. go check us out on the YouTube channel, guys, and subscribe to the channel so you don't miss one of these live streams in the future. But Noah Schultz is throwing mid-90s to upper-90s velocity with filthy sliders from the left side and does so without issuing tons of walks. Like, that's, yeah, okay. The White Sox are in this weird situation where, well, first of all, they might be sold. That would be really cool. I would hope that happens for White Sox fans everywhere. I mean, the fact that Benintendi was the most expensive contract they ever got is just, there you go. That's it. And I don't know if, even if there is a spot for Noah Schultz, if they would do it, you know, based on how the CBA is structured, I don't think the reward for AL Rookie of the Year is enough to push Schultz and lose a year of team control potentially. I got to think that they'll be saying like, he needs more time in AAA, and they come up in June, something along those lines, just to ensure that they have that extra year of control. And Noah Schultz is going to be really good, though. Yeah. I mean, It's a case of like Nick Lodolo, but harder, like harder velocity Nick Lodolo, which means that he can throw more in the zone with confidence and not try and nitpick around it. So, yeah.
The question for me is going to be that change up. Shout out to Chris Clegg over at Dynasty Dugout. I read a lot of his stuff. I don't know that you need it. I mean, that's the question when you get to MLB hitters, right? He's a fastball slider guy. It's a sweepier slider. He does throw the slider all over the plate. He'll throw it front door. He'll throw it back door. He'll throw it to righties. He'll throw it to lefties. It's clearly working, and it's clearly enough in the minors. The question is, as a left-handed pitcher with a sweepier slider, does it have the same success rate in the majors? And if it doesn't, to righties, where it's not going to be a bad pitch, but if it's not as elite against righties as it currently is in the minors, does he have enough confidence in that changeup, which he doesn't really throw a lot, to just give righties something else to also look at to prevent having some significant splits there?
I have a question, Eric. I have multiple questions, but one of them. Who's your favorite lefty?
You know I love Shane McClanahan, man.
No, it's not Shane McClanahan. He's not your favorite lefty.
What?
No.
Are you going to tell me who my favorite lefty is?
Yes.
Who do you think my favorite lefty is?
Come on, it's Chris Sale. And
I mean, I like Chris Sale.
Yes, sure. You just said, yes. There you go. And Chris Sale essentially didn't have his best changeup. It was fastball slider with the sweeper slider, and called strikes all day and getting whiffs with and
for sure.
Hard. And also, I see Garrett Crochet, who had a change for like one game to like stop the Twins because they needed to deal with a changeup once. And it's like, fine, here it is. But then just went fastball, cutter. It didn't even really need the big breaking ball that he had earlier on. And I think with a guy like Schultz, who if he's 6'7", 6'9", right? I would hope that means that he gets really good extension. And if it does, that means that the changeup, I mean, yes, would still be great. And I talk about all the time, lefties, this is a changeup league. You got to have that if you're a lefty. We've seen many examples, I think, of if you have just an elite skill set of a top of the line fastball, with a top of line breaking ball that works against both left-handed and right-handed, that you can be fine with this without it. I would love it. I also want to mention that guys that are more side-army than Reagans and Scooble and Tyler Anderson are going to have a tougher time with that changeup because it's going to be more on the side of the ball. And we always say you got to turn over the changeup. That is, you got to get on top of it. And the best guys, the best changeups are the ones that come from pitchers who get on top of the ball best. And Schultz isn't one of those. Chris Sale actually does get more on top of the ball, I think, than Schultz does. So it's something to note. I don't think that that will quite turn around, but maybe it does. Maybe he does develop that pitch. That'd be really unfair. I would have really hope, honestly, that Noah Schultz gets a cutter. And if you tell me that he has a big sweeping slider, then the cutter would actually be the good bridge pitch that he would need.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because Crochet, that cutter is significantly harder. It's about 10 miles an hour harder than where Schultz throws his slider right now.
Right.
But yeah, listen, Chris Sale, that would be a top tier level comparison. It would be great if we could see it happen. Anyway, I'm bullish on Noah Schultz. I hope it works.
Yeah, I'm all for this. Is exactly the perfect situation. Just take him and see if he does it. If you go with him out of camp. Also, Randy Johnson. Yeah, not really a changeup. It was a fastball slider and just destroyed everyone forever.
Fair.
So there you go.
Shoot for those comps. We're gonna give you more exciting young prospects on the next episode because there is a continuation of this tier. So make sure you tune in to check that out on the next episode of On the Corner. I am Eric Samulski, the Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And we'll see you on another episode of On the Corner.